Saddle up your horses. Well, hello, America. This is Robin Walter with the Robin Walters Show, and welcome, everyone. We got a lot to fit in today, so much so I even eliminated some of the breaks. That's just how much we've got to get in. Gosh, this the news cycle is, well, it's such that you have a hard time picking and choosing what it is that you want to cover. So I try to cover those things, as you may well know, that fall into one of two categories, sometimes both. There's either something that the mainstream media is not covering that I feel like I have an insight to share, because I'm not here to duplicate Fox and One America News and all of those, or there is a biblical application which will never show up on secular media. I don't care how good secular media might, how conservative that secular media outlet might be. If you have a comment, please feel free to reach me, robinwaltershow@gmail.com. robinwaltershow@gmail.com. If you'd like to give to the program, you can go on robinwalter.net. That's the website where you can also get a copy of this program as well if you want to send it on to somebody who might not listen to the podcast or the radio or what have you. robinwalter.net. It's downloaded there, but you can also give. Sorry to say we have to use PayPal on that. We continue to look for a worthy substitute. I do not like PayPal, not at all. However, I still have not, and I've had a couple people give me suggestions, come across a substitute that's as high of quality as far as performing their function. And you know what this is sort of like? This is not something I plan to talk about. But you know what? For those of us who are Christians, we like to use Christian lawyers, Christian doctors, Christian accountants, Christian plumbers, Christian electricians. We like to do that, right? I do want to be good to the household of faith, as it says in Scripture. However, what happens when you've got, let's just say it's a Christian plumber, and he just really isn't very good? And you got a guy who could make a sailor blush, but he's darn good, and he's actually honest. Who are you going to use? Well, I'm going to use the guy who makes the sailor blush. And why is it only sailors, anyway? Why isn't it Army guys or, Marines or Air Force? Oh, anyway, well, I don't know why. I guess it's because sailors are out on the sea, so they're the ones that have the salty language. Okay, that's the best I can come up with. But, you know, that's a tough choice. You want to use a Christian, but you don't want to use somebody that's substandard in their skill set. They're lazy. They're not given, which, you know, kind of wonder why they are that way, because it doesn't line up with their faith, but they're out there. So, anyway, this is where I'm stuck on the PayPal deal. There are some Christian providers for that service who just aren't. If they were close, I would be fine. I haven't found the ones that are really close. Anyway, okay, let's get going. So, George W. Bush, George W. Why the heck is he in the news? Because he makes a point of staying out of the news until recently, like in the last couple of days, he's made a point of getting in the news. And why would that be? This guy is an incredible disappointment. Now, I'm not going to sit here and question his salvation. I think he said he was led to the Lord by, I want to say it was Billy Graham. I'm not sure. I think it was somebody like that. Laura Bush gives no indication of being a Christian. She's pro-queer marriage, pro-abortion. She's pro-everything God is against. She seems to be against everything God is for. For everything I've ever heard about her, seems like to be sweet, demure, at least in front of the screen. You know, are there screaming tirades, or is she sweet and demure off camera? I don't really know. All I know is that none of her values line up with the Bible, at least the ones that she has spoken about, other than what was her big deal? Book learning, libraries or something like that. I can't remember exactly what her cause was. So George W., he is now making a point, stepping back into the political arena and he's sending out the maximum cash donations to Republicans that are struggling, and these Republicans are struggling because they're ones who voted to impeach Trump. So whether it is Liz Cheney, whether it's the Alaskan Senator Lisa Murkowski, these are ones that are struggling, and it's not a case where Bush is going out and helping struggling Republicans. These are Republicans who hate Trump, and they're struggling because they do hate Trump, and they have serious contention for their seats within the Republican Party. So what am I getting at? What I'm getting at here is that Bush's motivation for finally coming out and getting out a checkbook and writing the maximum donation allowed under law to both Cheney and to Murkowski is not a feature of struggling Republicans. It's because he likes the fact that they don't like Trump. I mean, in hindsight, Bush turns out to be nothing but Bush League. Well, anyway, and I guess with the case of Murkowski, it goes even deeper than that, because the former state commissioner, Kelly Tshibaka, if I'm pronouncing that right, Tshibaka, that's the challenger to Murkowski. She has been endorsed by Donald Trump. So that's one way to get the have Trump endorse somebody, and that will bring the enemies out. But I'd like to point out somebody that I just, you know, we don't do the good news portion of the program like I used to. I'd start with good news, end with good news. I try to do that, but it's no longer a defining feature of the program. I just got to get onto the things that need to be said. But there is one that I want to point out that, and I've mentioned him before, he is just superb. And it's Viktor Orban. Viktor Orban, who is the Hungarian Prime Minister. Now, before I go any further, I want to tell you, and I certainly will let you know if and when this comes about, I have some clients. I have, for whatever reason, a lot of Hungarian clients. I don't know. And it's not because I am a big fan of Hungarian goulash, although it's probably pretty good. But anyway, I just do. And one of them, who is probably lives in Hungary more than that person is in the U.S., with her contact said she is very close to getting me an interview with Viktor Orban. So if that should happen, we will do a Zoom interview with him for as long as he'll give me, because I want to pick his mind, his brain. I also want to compliment him and tell him how much he is liked, if not loved, by people who know about him here in the States. But he came out the other day and he said, quote, "I'd rather cut off my own hand than turn Hungary into an immigrant country like Germany." Oh, wow. Now, I'm pointing this out because Viktor Orban, like Trump, is what a leader should act like. And by the way, actually, he and Trump are good friends. What a surprise, huh? But Viktor Orban is very much pro-child bearing. He is not in any way, shape, or form anti-life. He's anti-mass migration. He is one who stands up for the family, for one man, one woman marriage. He's a great guy. And if I had to develop or put up a pecking order as to who I'd want, all other things being equal, I would actually take Vladimir Putin over Joe Biden. But I'd take Viktor Orban over Vladimir Putin. That's just, but in Eastern Europe, and I will include Eastern Europe to include Russia, they're developing some leaders that have some of us wondering, well, is it possible that Eastern Europe, which would include Russia in this case, are finding they've been under the thumb of anti-freedom people, let's call it what it is, anti-freedom people, for so long that they're longing for it. And I'm not saying you enjoy a ton of freedoms in Russia. You don't. You do more than they did under communism. But all things being equal, Vladimir Putin has higher morals than Joe Biden or Barack Hussein Obama. And I don't know. I just don't think they put up with the crap that we're putting up with in this country when it comes to violence, when it comes to looting and burning and murder and injuries. All the BLM Antifa crapola that we put up with because all the Democrats, all the anti-Trumpers thought that that's what it would take to get Trump out of office, and it may well have worked. Now they have to live with a pile of crap that they dropped. They have to live what they grew. You remember how when you're young, maybe some of you aren't as old as I am, but I know some of you are older, that expression, well, you grew it, you chew it, that just popped into my head. That's sort of what I think about when I think of the Dems. Hey, you grew it, you chew it. If you produce this crap, then it's up to you to consume it. It's your baby. You have done this. You have turned this into one violent world where just the other day, this breaks my heart. This California firefighter, Vidal Fortuna, he's fighting a fire and he is gunned down in cold blood by this loser Robert Somerville. I mean, my gosh. So we have this lawlessness that's simply been approved. And now the Democrats are trying to find a way to deal with it, except I've got to throw this out. People say, oh, that's conspiracy theory, Mr. Walter. Well, maybe, maybe not. But it can't be because I haven't talked it over with anybody. So if it's a conspiracy, it's a conspiracy of one. Is this the reinvented version of Barack Hussein's Fast and Furious program, where he funneled all these guns into Mexico, allegedly in a scheme so that they could track how they were coming back into the United States? All of which is very stupid, all of which cost the lives of border agents. I mean, Obama and whoever put this in place should be in jail for murder, as far as I'm concerned, treason at the least. But the real reason was that if you could increase the gun violence, then people would be calling for the elimination or severe restriction on firearms. Is that what is happening now? Is that why they still can't fund the police in these cities where only an idiot, only a moron would say there's no connection between police presence and the amount of crime? Is it actually what they want? Do they actually like the fact that everybody's shooting the crap out of each other in Chicago and many other cities? Lori Lightfoot, Chicago is just the worst. 20, 30, 40. There have been weekends where over 50 people have been shot, with over 10 of them dead. Do they not talk about Barack Hussein? Couldn't have given a rat's rear end about the crime in Chicago. One of the toughest gun laws anywhere. New York, tough. LA, tough. All the cities that have the toughest gun laws are the ones with the worst crimes. It just gets worse. And why? Because the honorable legal people have their hands tied. Some of them dispossessed of the ability to carry, which means they are dispossessed of the ability and right to defend themselves. But no, let's make sure that the criminals understand that it's against the law. Trust me, carrying around an open carry of a firearm for a criminal is not why they're called a criminal. It's what criminals do. They do illegal things. But that's not the first illegal thing they do. Why would they give a rip about what the law is? So somebody's going to go shoot up a school in Connecticut? All right? Gun-free zone. It's a gun-free zone. I mean, they're coming in there and they're all criminy. I want to come out in there and kill 20 kids in school, but it's a gun-free zone. I can't do it. Oh, rats. No. Goodness sakes. But this is how the left thinks. Well, the left doesn't think. They don't have the ability or capacity to think. Okay, as long as we're talking about stupid, let's touch on two more stories, and then we're going to go deeper today on some other things. This is so easy to see. The stuck on stupid states where the people think that they should be legalizing recreational marijuana. People say, well, booze is legal. Well, let's just legalize more things that will cause innocent people to get killed. You see, no girl gets pregnant on a Friday night because pot isn't legal. Nobody gets killed on the highway by an intoxicated stone driver because pot isn't legal. Nobody's committing suicides because it isn't legal. The fact of the matter is this. One of the first studies of its kind coming out from Scotland. So Scotland says that since the quasi-decriminalization, essentially the legalization of pot, 4 years ago, psychiatric issues of pot users and smokers has increased 74%. 74%. Well, it's for medical purposes. Not if the medical purposes actually end up causing bigger medical purposes. That's a bunch of garbage. I mean, girls getting a license to use pot because their ankle hurts from wearing high heels too much, too long in the day. Well, there are other ways to resolve that problem, sweetheart. But those are the kinds of things for which medical pot has been issued where legalized pot isn't. But now where it's legalized, medical marijuana is just a segue into recreational marijuana. We all know that. We are paying the price. People come back from work, from a break or lunch. They're stoned because it's legal. Worker productivity is going down. Divorce goes up. And as we see now, first study that I know of its kind in Scotland, psychiatric issues up 74%. And let's move over to the burn, loot, and murder crowd. BLM week is upon the schools nationwide. And they are so bad. They are so ridiculous. They're a terrorist organization, as is Antifa. But the fact is now, BLM week, they're teaching episodes, their pods, as they call them, to instruct kids, actually to indoctrinate kids as to what they should think, have come out with a new law, and one of them is, quote, everybody gets to choose their own gender. Oh, how precious is that? Yeah. And because you are behind it, BLM, you get to deal with the wrath of God someday unless you get saved. But it goes deeper than that. And here's how it goes deeper. I have harped so long on the necessity of getting kids and grandkids out of government schools. I can't blame the schools any longer. I can only blame the parents. We're at the point that if there's a problem, it's actually the parents' fault. So, well, I got to work. I got to get the kid. I don't have any choice. Yes, you do have choices. There are so many institutions out there willing to help kids get into Christian schools, to get into kind of group home schools where that parent is only partially involved. I mean, look, where's the priority? And I have to push this off also on the grandparents because grandparents are more likely to have the time and the money to give a real choice. And it's interesting because the left is all about, quote, pro-choice when they want to kill, slaughter your innocent unborn child. But they are anti-choice when it comes to being able to choose your own school. What a pack of hypocrites. That's right. If the Republicans get power back, the Democrats are in danger of hypocrisy. The democracy, the hypocrisy could be shadowed. Florida Democrats pulling a Illinois number, pulling a Wisconsin number, and every other state where they don't have the guts to hang around with people who have more morals and actually happen to be in the majority, as rare as that is, walk out on Ron DeSantis' new Surgeon General pick. Okay, so the Democrats in Florida, the great, great majority of whom are white or Hispanic, walk out on the announcement of Florida's new Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Ladapo, who is black. So why isn't this discrimination? Why, if somebody opposes one of Biden's racist picks, because he's already announced he's a racist, he just doesn't know the meaning of the word, and I'm not saying I'm flat out against this number one candidate. I don't know enough about any of them to judge. I will. I mean, I'll take a look. You know, a tree by its fruit. But for anybody who already is challenging Biden because he has developed a racist paradigm for judicial selections, the left calls those individuals racists. And why aren't all these Democrats in Florida racist? Because they walked out on the Surgeon General's confirmation hearing. He's a great guy. Well, the fact of the matter is, they are racist. There just isn't anybody in the news with the guts to call them out. Okay, hate to say it, but a brief, very brief COVID update. It's hard to get by without a couple of updates, which I give only because the evidence continues to grow that all the misinformation is really on the part of the establishment. You need a booster and you're safe. No, you get the shot, you're absolutely safe from getting COVID. Lie. You can't pass on COVID. Lie. You can't get it and get sick. Lie. You can't get it and you won't die. Lie. You won't be hospitalized. Lie. You won't need any more shots. Lie. The next one will be the last one. Lie. Lie out of every orifice of their body. The originators of misinformation are the left, which really is just the media. Well, this is pretty interesting. Dr. Jessica Rose, very esteemed in the medical community, has written that based on a recent analysis, they estimate, and they have to extrapolate to estimate, and I don't have time to go into the meaning of extrapolate, but I trust you know the word. I know, I'm challenged too. I went to a government school. Well, Jessica Rose estimates that the number of spontaneous abortions caused by the COVID vaccines has now exceeded 172,000. Pregnant women having spontaneous abortions because they took the jab and that did the job on the child. And that's not all. Tawny Butner, who is a registered nurse at the cardiothoracic intensive care unit, Children's Hospital in San Diego. She's been there for 12 years. She has come out and said that she has personally observed, and there's really no explanation other. I realize this is anecdotal. She'll admit it's anecdotal. But she said this is only happening now where it's never been the case for the last 12 years, and nobody has the guts to even voice the possibility of why it's happening. And that is the rate of myocarditis, inflammation in the heart, is up over 1,000% since the vaccines have come out, which, of course, are not a vaccine. You got to get the jab to keep your job. So people get the jab to keep their job. And then when they get sick, they're out of a job. And then they start getting more jabs. Well, anyway, what's going to happen if, in fact, these vaccine Nazis come to your door? I posed this question 2 weeks ago, and there was so much else in the news, I really just did not have time to deal with it in the right and proper way without misstating myself. I want to be careful what I say, but I want to be correct in what I say, and I don't want to run off in the flesh. Yeah, I sometimes do. Some people say, hey, Rob, you know, you sound like you got a little off in the flesh. Yep, you're absolutely right. What's the next comment? I do ask God for forgiveness when that happens. I say, well, you get pretty close to the edge. I will confess this, I do want to be close to the edge. I can't see the bottom of the Grand Canyon from a half a mile back. I need to get close to the edge of the Grand Canyon to see what's at the bottom. I just don't want to go over. So let's start off with a little bit of a tutorial on self-defense and scripture. And I'm going to make some I'm going to broaden the understanding of the biblical perspective, proper perspective of weapons and when you get to use them. Now, you say, all right, man, I'm already headed in a scary area here. We're talking about when do you get to use weapons. And I preceded this by saying, what do you do when the vaccine Nazis come to your door? I will tie it together. Don't worry about it. First of all, there are many places in Scripture that actually discuss the proper use and application of weapons. Many places. And while most of the time, the pieces of Scripture which speak to issues that we often speak about, such as abortion or queer sex and all that crap, with a great number, disproportionate number of those verses are in the Old Testament. That doesn't make them any less viable or applicable. They're every bit as applicable as the New Testament as it comes to ordering society and what is appropriate in the context of how do we carry on in society and what can we do and not do. See, the New Testament revolves primarily around relationships between individuals and God. God and man, and then between man and man. The Old Testament does cover some of that, but it lays out the legal framework for an orderly society. That is not touched on in the New Testament. Except that the New Testament does have a few references to the appropriate use of arms. And we are going to touch on those. But first of all, let's just start from the distinction between killing and murder. In the Ten Commandments, you can't murder. But the Ten Commandments do not say don't kill. In fact, it doesn't. In fact, even Jesus said to Peter, rise up and kill, Peter. Well, of course, that was dealing with animals. But the fact of the matter is there is a difference. And John Adams, one of my heroes, said, quote, arms in the hands of citizens may be used at individual discretion for three things: defense of the country, the overthrow of tyranny, or private self-defense. Now, I'm not saying that John Adams is quoting scripture here. There's a lot of overlap. And we'll get to those in a minute here, but I do want to say that these three things are what is referenced and the reason why we have the Second Amendment. We do not have the Second Amendment because the founders wanted to make sure that we had a constitutional right to join Ducks Unlimited. That is not why we have it. In fact, when you read the Second Amendment, the necessity of arms to be able to keep a free state, you'll see that, and I didn't quote it here properly, but the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. If you read that just for what it says, you will see that on the surface and the primary purpose for people being able to keep and bear arms is actually point number two of Adams for the overthrow of tyranny. It is. Because the British imposed arms restrictions on the colonials. And if you can't defend yourself, then it doesn't take much of an army to get overrun. And so the founders made sure that the colonists, citizens, had the right to keep and bear arms, but for the purpose was for the necessity of maintaining a free state. A free state. So if the feds become punitive, invasive, overbearing, freedom restricting, imposing in the breaching of their constitutional limitations, the state has the right to pull out the guns and fight off the feds. Pure, clean, and simple. I do. That's right where it is. Well, people say, you mean that the Constitution actually doesn't protect the right of private self-defense? Specifically, no. But here's the reason. No one 245 years ago, no one, actually it'd be 230, well, okay, 2022 minus 1789. Okay, a long time ago, when the Constitution was approved, ratified, never was there a thought that a person couldn't use a gun in self-defense. No contemplation of that. When the founders would say, why on earth do we need to put in this ridiculous provision that you've got a gun, you can have a gun for self-defense? Everybody knows that, knucklehead. Do we also put in there that you also have a right to breathe? Do we put in there that you have a right to be able to eat pancakes every breakfast? Do you have a right to do this and that? No. There are certain elements of freedom that are so assumed. It would take a knucklehead to conclude otherwise. But those knuckleheads are now in office. And they will pervert that because the perversion is possible because they don't know jack about our history. They've never read the Constitution. If they did, they despise it for its intent. Because we were drafted by a bunch of old white men. Well, guess what, sweetheart or guy? You're going to be old someday, too, and it doesn't matter if you're white, black, or Hispanic. We're just going to make fun of you because you're old and presumably without wisdom, without any understanding, that even among non-Christians, at least for some, they come to understand through the school of hard knocks and gain a few nuggets of truth and wisdom just because they've lived long enough and screwed up things wrong long enough to know what's right and wrong in a whole bunch of circumstances. You see, the Holy Spirit just gave me this. When Solomon died, he passed on the kingship to Rehoboam. And Rehoboam had a bunch of friends, a bunch of pals, a bunch of losers. Probably a pack of rich kids who never worked in their life, like Rehoboam never worked in his life. And it came to the time when Jeroboam came before him and said, look, don't make us work as hard as your dad did. He was very hard on us. And then the elders, the old guys, the old Jewish guys, sorry, we didn't have blacks or Hispanics and Asians and typical Caucasians to choose from. They're just a bunch of old Jewish guys. Said to Rehoboam, who served with Solomon, learned his wisdom for a long period of time. They said to Rehoboam, look, if you speak kindly to these people and you address them in a manner by which they would want to be spoken to. They will serve you. But what does the young punk Rehoboam do? He takes the advice of his young punk friends who say, look, just tell these people, get back to work, and my little finger will be the size of my my father's waist. In other words, you know, he gave you whatever. I can't remember how it goes. But anyway, he lashed out on them in a manner which assured that these people knew that they were going to be treated even more harshly than the latter days of Solomon's reign. And guess what? The nation split. Because the young punks, the Presleys, the Tlaibs, the AOCs, the BLMs, the Antifas, all of which young punks who say the Constitution's old, these are just a bunch of old white people, they don't know what they're talking about, they're racist, blah, 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 they aren't any different than the young punks who fed Rehoboam the worst advice that Rehoboam could ever follow. And what was the consequence of following that crappy advice? The nation of Israel was split. What is the consequence of us following, or the left in power giving heed to the punks? And I call them punks with no due respect whatsoever. And the malcontents, and there's some older ones too, like Bill Ayers and those types. If you heed that, then this country splits too. And that's the path that we're on. So they don't want to learn from the Constitution or from history, because history and the Constitution properly understood would be an indictment for all their anti-God, their bibliophobic, Christophobic, communist, Marxist, leftward, not just leanings, they're lying on their left side. They're not just leaning, they have fallen over on their left side. They can't tolerate that. That's why they have to beat the tar out of us, because we convict them of their error. They have only the strong arm and the club of the left-wing mob and the media to beat up the conservatives to help keep them in power. So the defense of the country, well, not too many people would argue with Adam's comment on the defense of the country. Purpose of the arms, yeah. Got to defend the country. I mean, the right defends the left and the left defends the right when we go to war, in theory, except we got the wokeism infiltrating the military, so that could be toast before long. Overthrow of tyranny? Absolutely. Absolutely. As I saw on a T-shirt, when tyranny becomes law, revolution becomes duty. And the purpose isn't to necessarily destroy the government. The purpose is to extract from the conflict and extract freedom for you and for the state in which you reside. That's why the colonists did what they did. So is that biblical? Actually, yes. There were two areas of Lachish, and there was another area which I have forgotten about. I'm actually just being given things here I actually hadn't prepared, so I'm just going to run with it. That because of the wickedness of Israel, they revolted, and not revolted to throw out the government in Jerusalem. They revolted to be independent. They seceded, not succeeded, meaning successful, seceded. They left. Scripture speaks no ill will against those individuals who for the cause of righteousness actually departed the nation of Israel. Now, the split that Rehoboam caused was between Judah and the other 10 tribes, and Judah and Benjamin, and then the other 10 tribes, which were wicked, but they left for that. Now, in the book of Exodus 22, verses 2 through 3, it says, if a thief is caught breaking in at night and has struck a fatal blow, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. This is the private self-defense Adams is talking about, which also, like the overthrow of tyranny, is actually biblical. And why? Because when somebody breaks into your house at night, you don't know. You have to sort of assume that this person means you ill because they're sneaking around. You don't know if they've got a 10-inch blade, they got a 357 Magnum, if they got a hatchet. You don't know if there's two of them or three of them. It's dark. You can shoot them and kill them. No questions asked. They're in your house, it's dark. If it's daytime, it's a different story. But you need to understand and hear the rest of this because this is very important. Maybe coming to a town near you. We'll be right back. This is Robin Walter, and this is a first for me. You know, in 16 years on the air, I have never promoted a product because I hear others do it. And truth be known, they say they use the product, and, well, they did once. But I want to introduce you to Dissident Soaps, a fine company promoted by Gab News because it's a moral, patriotic American company that makes fine products. Absolute best deodorant I have ever used. Great shampoo, and they even have me now using body wash, which is not, always a guy thing. But check them out online at DissidentSoaps.com. That's Dissident, D-I-S-S-I-D-E-N-T, if you graduated from a government school like me, .com. But be sure and tell them that you heard it on the Robin Walters Show.
Down home, where they know you by name and treat you like family. Down home, a man's good word and a handshake are all you need. Folks know, if they're falling on hard times, they can fall back home. Those of us raised up down home.
We're back, the Robin Walters Show. As I was mentioning before, Exodus 22:2-3. Verses 2 and 3, if a thief is caught breaking in at night, you kill him, you can. Defender is not guilty of bloodshed. He doesn't know who's there. You have to assume that the person could be there to kill you. If it's daytime, it's a different story. Now the right to kill him is a feature of whether you are in imminent bodily, in imminent danger of serious bodily harm or death. So if a person breaks in the daytime, they're pointing a gun at you or they pull out a knife, you can kill them again. But it's not automatic like it is at night. Because at night you don't know who it is. It could be the 12-year-old kid next door. And he's got some fake rubber knife or he's got nothing. He's there because he wants some, some little TV or something. You're not at threat, but you don't know that at night. But during the day, if it's a 12-year-old kid next to you, don't get to shoot him. Of course not. But somebody who is putting you in imminent danger or fear or threat of serious bodily harm or death, yeah, you get to kill him. And only daylight gives you that ability to know. In the dark, you cannot assume what it is because if somebody's doing that, you have to assume that they may kill you. And why? Because, interesting, the women's Methodist Women's Society came out some time back and said, if you're getting raped and you have a gun, just let the person rape you. Don't shoot them. Don't try to defend yourself. I don't know if these are women who kind of haven't been in the sack for a long time or what it is. They've got something that rape is kind of, stimulating. But giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're not that salacious, then the alternative is they're ridiculously stupid. Because if there is one witness to a rape, and that witness has the ability to put that person away in the hooskow, the joint, up the river, the big house, whatever you want to call it, what do you think that rapist is considering? He's already committing a crime that could put him away for 10, 20, 30 years. Why not kill you, Methodist woman? You're the only witness. You're the only one that can put them away. Why not kill you? They're so stupid they do not even think of that. It really irks me. But in the book of Esther, this is an interesting piece because in the book of Esther, the Jews were targeted for destruction. Wait a second. I got to hold that to the end. I got to make a point there that I need to wrap up with. But the fact of the matter is, let's get going here. In the book of Nehemiah, he had the workers. They were threatened, right? People that wanted them to quit building the wall. But they armed themselves, working with one hand laying bricks, the other arm or hand holding a sword. So these are good people. They got weapons. And when Joash the priest, Joash the king, was raised up by Jehoiada the priest to throw off the monstrous rule of Athaliah, and they took out that old bag, they executed her when Joash was 7 years old, and it was a righteous execution. This lady needed to go and get gone. They slew her at the horse gate, I think is where it says. They killed her. And who killed her? The priest. Where did they get the guns? Of course, they didn't have guns. My point is, where did they get the weapons? The swords. The axes, the pickaxes. They were stored in the church, so to speak. They were stored in the temple. The temple was the repository of weapons. So don't anybody out there tell me there's no place for guns in church. In fact, if there are guns in church, frankly, those blacks in South Carolina wouldn't have been killed by that guy. I can't think of his name, nor would all those people out in the church in Texas. A couple years have been slaughtered if somebody in there was packing to take the guy out. I had a guy write me from prison. He was in for second-degree murder. He heard me say, the passage speaking from Hebrews, he who does not provide for his own is worse than an infidel. When I said that passage also pertains to gun ownership to protect the lives of your spouse and children or whoever is in your house. You're going to provide shoes, provide food, clothing, shelter, heat, light, but you wouldn't provide for them. And you're supposedly supposed to turn the other cheek, which only means an insult. If somebody wants to insult you and call you pond scum or a scum-sucking pig, whatever, doesn't hurt you. You let that go. It's like a slap in the face with a pair of gloves, kind of like it's an insult. Let it go. But my goodness, you don't get to turn your wife's cheek or your husband's cheek or your 14-year-old daughter's cheek. And are you going to stand by while a couple of thugs come into the house and raped your 14-year-old daughter or granddaughter? And you're not armed to protect her? Shame on you. If you don't have the ability and you don't love your family enough to protect them with a gun. Jesus said, because people will say, well, we're just going to rely on the Lord. Fat chance. That is presumption. Absolute presumption. Because Jesus said to sell your cloak and buy a sword. People try to spiritualize that. That is a bunch of balderdash that it's spiritualized. Because why? Because one of the disciples said, here are two swords. Jesus said, sell your cloak and buy a sword. The disciples said, well, here are two swords. And if it were spiritualized, Jesus said, come on, don't you get it? I'm not talking about physical force. This, I was trying to teach you a spiritual point, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't say anything like that. What he says is, oh, that's enough. Two swords is enough. And why are two swords enough for that disciple? Because a disciple, newsflash, only has two hands. It's all the weapons he can handle. That's why Jesus said, it's enough. And then people would say, well, you know, Jesus kind of rebuked Peter in the garden because he pulled out the sword, and he cut off the high priest's servant Malthus's ear. Now, did Jesus say to Peter, Peter, what the hey? Where did you get that sword? He didn't say that. He put it away because Peter was getting in the way of Jesus going to the cross. He had a mission. Jesus was a man with the ultimate, consummate mission. He wasn't there to be protected and saved. He made it clear he could have called down 10,000 angels. That wasn't the plan. The angels were not necessary because the task didn't call for him to be saved. It called for him to be offered up as a living sacrifice. Therefore, Peter, put it away. You're getting in the way. And to make the point even more, mark this down. This is an incredible passage. Luke 22, 19, I think it is. It's the disciples come to Jesus. They're at the in the garden. They say, "Shall we smote them?" In other words, the Romans and the high priest, the Jews had come there. Shall we smite them? Well, if Peter was the only one with a sword, then these other disciples who aren't named, but it says, "Shall we?" And the reference is to them, plural. Could they have ever said, "Shall we smite them?" And what Jesus turns around with what? That pea shooter? Well, no. This is an indication. We all only ever focus on Peter because Peter went ahead and did the deed. But it has the appearance of all of them or a great majority of them packing. Yeah. They were all carrying, or a great number, a majority of them were. For that passage to be true, it has to be that way. Which brings us back to the point that Jesus never disparaged it. They didn't have to take it on the first missionary trip, but he told them to take one or two would be enough, because after he's gone, he's not there to call down the 10,000 angels. It's just a whole new game, whole new ball game. Now back to Esther. I got to be fast with this. In the book of Esther, there's a very jealous Mede or Persian by the name of Haman. He really hates a man named Mordecai. Mordecai is a Jew because Mordecai won't bow down and, in essence, worship Haman. So Haman gets King Ahasuerus to sign a law. And the law says on such and such a date, all these Jews throughout the whole kingdom, they may be plundered, they may be killed, ravaged on such and such a day. Well, Esther, who is drop-dead gorgeous, she was given a gift, she was created for just such a purpose as this, came before her husband, King Ahasuerus, who hadn't seen her in 30 days, and apparently he gets to look at her and he goes, "Wow, man alive, what have I been doing the last 30 days? But he takes her wish. She conveys to him ultimately that Haman is a really bad guy and all of her people, the Jews, are going to be wiped out. But the law of the Persians and the Persians and the Medes cannot be changed. Ahasuerus can't change the law. But what he can do is sign a new law, which he did with Mordecai. And it was distributed out through the whole kingdom. They couldn't change the fact that there would be people coming after the Jews. But what he said now, "Okay, you Jews, we're giving you the right now to defend yourself, to plunder those who are attempting to plunder you, and to kill them if need be. You may slay them." Bottom line, however the demoncrats pervert the law, if they should attempt to pervert it even more than they have, to act outside the bounds of the Constitution, which they do for fun, because the Constitution is nothing but a stumbling block and a speed bump for these guys and gals. If they launch vaccine Nazis and they come to your door, what right do you have? What rights do you have biblically? Now, they're acting under a law or an order which is not a law, which means it's unlawful. Are they coming to take away your children? Because as we read last week, a lot of Democrats support that. 29% of all Democrats support children being taken away from parents who won't get the COVID shot. 59% of the Democrats say that they should be taxed. Especially tax those people who won't get the vaccine. 48% should say they should be imprisoned and put in internment camps. These are Democrats. That's the Rasmussen survey that I read a couple of weeks ago. It's awful. This is how they think, because they need that to justify they're getting the jab. They want to give you the jab so that they, well, who knows. But what can you do? What are you allowed to do? If they are coming and they're coming to take you to an internment camp, guess what? The Nazis came to take the Jews away. They told them, "Ihr Führer, cease your height, it's for your health. We're going to take you to a place for your health where get in this boxcar. We're going to take you to so you can have a nice hot shower." Well, they got a shower, but there was a shower of gas. The number of Democrats that want anti-vaxxers killed is beyond belief. And if they're taking you away, what are they taking you away for? What are they taking your children away for? I trust it'll never get to that we won't accept that fact. It'll stop long before that. I'm thrilled that we have tens of millions of people, even some on the left, now buying guns, but it's mostly because of violence, not because of the COVID crapola and wanting to take our children, our lives, and put us in prison. Read that Rasmussen survey. What do you have the right to do? If you are in imminent danger of serious bodily harm or a threat to your life, you may use deadly force. Right. Is it an imminent threat? They're going to grab you by the scruff of the neck and point a gun at your head to haul you off to the boxcar. Probably is. Taking your children gets a little tougher. Keep in mind, whatever you do, you got to sit tall in the saddle because you ride for the brand. God bless you. Talk to you later.